Mogers immediately gets picked off by Warner. Fred Warner climbs the ladder to get it, and now he sprints down the sideline. Inside the 10, he won't be denied. Touchdown, San Francisco.
Now back to overtime with Grandy, Manson, and Bennett, with sounds from the locker room and your calls at 888-957-9570. Overtime continues now.
So much more fun doing this after a 49ers win, 30-13. San Francisco dominates the New England Patriots, thanks in part to that highlight you just heard, Fred Warner's pick six. That was the point of the game. That we had a caller earlier, I think it was Theo, who called in earlier and said, yeah, hey, it felt a little bit, I was a little bit nervous after the two field goals to open the game. The Niners get deep into Patriots territory. They wind up with field goals in both instances, but come back in the second quarter with the Warner pick six. And that play was, not a surprise that it was Fred Warner. Comes up with a huge defensive play the Niners need. But B, that was the point of the game for me that I went, all right, they're good. Like, okay, they're gonna win. By how many? Couldn't tell you. But they're going to win this game, and I feel good about it because it's number 54 coming up with yet another massive play this season.
Yeah, we've been talking about Fred. Maybe he had a little bit of a down week last week, as did the whole defense. But incredible week two. Very good week one. He was awesome in this game in only a half of football, had that pick six. And what I thought in the moment after he had the interception, by the way, just reading the eyes of Jacoby Brissett, drifting to his right, feeling the post coming, and he's got more over the middle, and he slides back to his right and leaps, makes an incredible grab, has the wherewithal to get up and has the athleticism to then make a couple of guys miss, ridiculous. Get down the right sideline, stay inbounds, tiptoe the sideline, dive for the end zone. And the first thought that ran through my mind is, us calling him the defensive player of the year is underselling him. He might be the best football player, period. Like, he is so good. Man. He's so good.
Wow. Sterling, your thoughts?
He laps the field.
Other That's why he's a GOAT.
Other linebackers in the NFL, he laps them. He is, like, we call him the best linebacker in the NFL, as we should. That doesn't give him enough credit because he's just so much better than everybody else at that position. He's incredible.
He's been the best 49er. He's been the best defensive player in the NFC West. And I think, you know, not having Aaron Donald here anymore, people finally get to see Fred Warner being the great player that he is. And we all knew he was great. He's elite, best linebacker in football. But you don't have the guy in SoCal taking all the credit for how great he is now. It's all Fred Warner's show in the NFC West. But going back to the interception, the pick six, the offense, two back-to-back red zone stalls. You're like, oh my goodness, this feels like the offense that's been terrible or been stuck in the mud for the last 3 weeks. How is this game going to progress? And they're still not great, but they get the fumble. They can't score. My dad texts me and goes, Moody, 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 blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you're right, Dad. Like, you're right. Like, we got to score some points. And thankfully, Fred Warner comes up, gets the pick six. The offense is going crazy. The defense is celebrating. Finally get the Levi fans, the crowd at Levi's into the game. You can hear it start to get bumping out there. And Fred Warner, man, he's one of the players you point to and say, whenever we need a big moment, that guy is going to make the big play. And he always, always does.
Yeah, it's pretty uncanny. And I think you guys are right. So Joe Shasky said to me a couple of years ago, this is legit, this is like during the 2022 season, he was like, man, I kind of think Fred Warner's better than Patrick Willis. And I went, come on.
Get lost.
I like Fred as much as the next guy, but come on.
Don't disrespect the Hall of Famer Pat Willis like that.
But I kind of think, I think I agree with him.
He's probably the best linebacker that I've ever seen play on the 49ers.
Yeah, dude. And that is with, again, that is with all due respect to Navarro Bowman, who should have had a DPOY in 2013. That is with all due respect to Patrick Willis, who should have been in the Hall of Fame many years ago. I am fully understanding of what saying Fred Warner is the best linebacker I've watched at the 49ers means. I know the gravity of that. But after watching him to start this season, three forced fumbles, two interceptions, a pick six, all in 3.5 games, by the way. Didn't even play. Second on the team in tackles today. Didn't play the second half. Didn't matter. Just played the worst game of his life back in week 3. and comes back and just kind of took ownership of this game for the 49ers like he did in Minnesota. They didn't win that game, but it was they were only close because of Fred. Like, at this point, he's got to be the DPOY front runner, and I think I'm ready to say that he's the best 49ers linebacker I've ever watched. I think I'm there, guys. Any arguments? Are we all in agreement?
I agree.
Hell yeah.
I'm with you.
Are you there?
Yeah,
I'm with you. Come on. All right. Great.
There's also so much on his shoulders, though. The offense, again, doesn't have McCaffrey, didn't have Debo, all that stuff. You know, how is Purdy going to respond? How is Fred Warner and the defense going to respond? No Dre Greenlaw, no Talanoa Hufanga.
Yeah.
Third downs are terrible. You're not getting pressure. Wow. Like, this was a massive game for the defense to step up. They get two takeaways. They get two early in the game, at least. They get one later in the game. Like, this defense came to play, and Fred Warner was kind of the genesis of that. Of, okay, guys, like, we have to come out. Forget what happened at SoFi last week. Forget the Vikings game. This is a bad team in the Patriots. Mm-hmm. The offense, they can't move the football. They're not going to push us deep downfield. It's all going to be in the box. Let's control the box. And Fred Warner getting the pick six was the epitome of controlling the box. This was the defense's game. The offense played great for sure at times, but the defense was just amazing today for San Francisco. And Fred Warner was the beginning of that stuff.
Yeah, and I also think when you have someone that always leads the right way and says the right things and has the right mindset, you kind of underrate it. Like, when you have it, when you don't have it is when you notice it. And that's why I think so many people have freaked out about some of the Brandon Ayuk stuff. Not saying that he's a bad teammate or any of that, but that's what some people have been saying, that the way that he's handled the offseason and being a little frustrated that he has to change the pants that he's wearing at practice, like, whatever. I don't think it's that big of a deal.
But feels petulant.
That's the leap that some people make. And for Fred, like you mentioned, what he did week two in Minnesota, absolutely incredible. Maybe the best game I've ever seen him play. It's just unfortunate that it happened in a loss when literally everybody else around him defensively played like they got 2 hours of sleep the night before. Like, unfortunate the way that it went down. But Fred, after that game, what does he say on the podium? He says, yeah, that 97-yard touchdown to Justin Jefferson, that's on me. I was coming on a blitz. I got to get to Darnold. That's my fault, guys. Like, he was the only reason that game was close.
Yeah.
Not only is he the best player the Niners have on the defensive side, at the very least, you could argue the best player they have. Mm-hmm. You could argue the best defensive player in the NFL. Not only is he that, but he is this team's spiritual leader. He is the guy that gets them fired up and ready for games. Obviously, Debo and Trent have a role there as well, but Fred Warner is the heart and soul and the heartbeat of this team as well. And without him, and from a leadership standpoint, they would hurt. We know how much they would struggle without him on the field, but he's also so good in those other roles, and he's really grown into that over the last like 3 or 4 years as well.
The Niners defense was so good today, and I think we've kind of been waiting on a performance like this, where the Niners defense just looks dominant, and they did against a not very good Patriots offense. Here's Kyle Shanahan from his post-game press conference. Here's Kyle Shanahan talking about the Niners defense.
I mean, I thought the defense was awesome all day. Anytime you score, even better. But, you know, to start out the way they did, the first couple drives especially, scoring, Fred getting the score, the two turnovers they created. I didn't get a look at all the stats, but I think they were really good on third down. Defense felt like dominated all day.
Yeah, they did. And I know that there's a level of competition here, right? Like, the Patriots are bad. And Sterling, you mentioned it earlier, defending them is not super hard because, you know, you can play within that like 10-yard box between the numbers. Yeah, and
pretty
you're
pretty one-dimensional.
You're pretty all right. You're all set. It was how many? It felt like they had 10 series today and they all went run on first down, run on second down, pass on third and long. That's kind of how it felt all game.
To the Patriots' credit, pass on third and long worked kind of often.
Hey, Malik Mustafa, the missed tackle on the third and six of the first drive. Oh, we got to make a play, Rook. We got to make a play in space.
Ramondre didn't even give him a juke. He just ran to the right and ran around him.
Like, no, you gotta wrap him up. Tackle the outside shoulder. Get your head around. It's fine. Drop the interception later. It's okay. Niners defense, I want so badly to lean into the Patriots aren't good, but they aren't. And the Niners defense dominated the way a good defense should dominate a bad offense, right? Like, that's kind of the takeaway for me is, okay, Nick Bosa had the strip sack and fumble recovery at the end. That was great, but man, he affected so many plays. Leonard Floyd didn't have a sack, but he affected so many plays. And then you go get Evan Anderson, the undrafted rookie defensive tackle, getting a strip sack. You get Kevin Givens had 2.5 sacks in the second quarter. He had 5.5 sacks in 60 games coming into today. He has 2.5 in the second quarter. Malik Collins was outstanding. I think he's been really, really good for the 49ers so far this year. He had 1.5 sacks, also all in the second quarter. This was just an all-around really great defensive effort from a unit that I think they were my bigger question than anything they were doing offensively. Like, I had so many questions about this defense coming into today, and while you need to see them build on it, this was a really, this performance today was a really great starting point for me.
Well, frankly, it was ugly the past 2 weeks. It was, Can these guys even get off the field on third downs on any given drive against the Vikings and the Rams? But, you know, credit goes to, the players themselves. Isaac Yiadom wasn't a liability today. Devondre Campbell wasn't perfect, but the way the Patriots play suits his play style more in a run-stuffing linebacker. And we did get to see Tatum Bethune and Dee Winters, and it was nice to see young players get some reps. But I think more importantly, we saw Nick Sorensen from the jump say, look, the Patriots' offensive line is banged up. They're not going to test us deep. They blitzed like 6 or 7 times in the first two or three drives against New England. You want to see a young defensive coordinator say, you know what? Let's make them beat us. Fred Warner was dropping back in coverage. Campbell's going in for blitzes. Lenore's blitzing. Whoever else is out there, linebacker's blitzing. DFF was blitzing. Like, you can see that the way that the Niners played and were coached in this game was ultimately attack, 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 attack. Mm-hmm. And that's what you should do against bad teams. Make them beat you. Force them to make plays. Give them pressure. And Brissett was running for his life almost every single play. Yeah. And even when he wasn't, it was like, okay, we're pretty sticky in coverage on second and first down. So, you know, third downs are 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8. And while those have to get cleaned up, it's like you'll take those against a bad team every single drive. And San Francisco's defense, more than anything, kind of smothered the Patriots' offense today. And that's what you want to see. Bounce back in a big way. This was that big way.
Yeah, I think I'm with both of you guys. The concern for me wasn't necessarily that the 49ers didn't have the talent to be good defensively. I mean, it was just so bad against the Rams last week that it kind of leaves you wondering, are we overvaluing some of the talent on this roster? They're not playing as well as they are. All the names that Kyle threw out, I mean, they all had the best games of their season. I was worried how this team might look in the middle without Javon Hargrave. Malik Collins was awesome in this game. Givens, as Kyle pointed out, was awesome in this game. And my concern wasn't necessarily that they don't have the bodies to get it done, but it was more the scheme and changing things up, because what the Niners have relied on for so long, and if you can get it done this way, of course you want to do it this way. What they've relied on is getting pressure on the quarterback while only rushing 4. Mm-hmm. Essentially, you're 4 down linemen. You get pressure when rushing 4. You drop 7 into coverage. Odds are you're going to be a very, very good defense, and that's partly why the Niners have been so good over the last 6 years, because they've been able to pretty consistently get pressure on a quarterback while only rushing 4 and dropping everybody else back into coverage. Well, this year they haven't been able to do that, really. Mm-hmm. And now you take out Javon Hargrave, and it seemed pretty obvious to me that the Niners, in order to affect the quarterback, they were going to have to blitz more.
Yep.
And Sterling, what you pointed out is exactly right. I know it's the Patriots. I know it's a relatively one-dimensional offense. Jacoby Brissett, not mobile. Like, we'll see how this works when they play Kyler Murray next week, right? That's going to be a challenge. Murray has always given the Niners some trouble. It's because of the way he uses his legs to extend plays and take off and run at times. But to affect a quarterback, given what the last month and even really last year showed, you're going to have to maybe change up your scheme a little bit. You're going to have to be a little more willing to blitz. And the Niners changed up their looks. Maybe you're getting to a point where they feel a little bit more comfortable making a schematic shift. And again, today's the Patriots. It's not a good offense. We'll see how it looks against a better offense. But this was at least a step in that direction, showing me that they're willing to at least reconsider maybe the plan of attack for them defensively.
Yeah, and I'm wondering, too, if there's going to be a personnel change if they start doing that more. Because if you're going to do that against a better team, you have to cover in the second level. And I'm not 100% sure they can do that with the current personnel group they have out there right now.
If one of the guys not blitzing is Devondre Campbell, I do not want Devondre Campbell on the field.
Hey, how about D. Winters had a nice little tackle for loss today?
And is the
third linebacker. So, no, I think I'm with you. I was wondering where we might see, because Kyle Shanahan said this week, I believe it was on Wednesday, if you're not getting it done with the players that you have, then you have to start looking at what you're doing schematically. And I'm wondering if that might be the tweak for them, because midseason you're probably not going to jump to a 3-4. Like, that's a lot to do in the midst of preparing for a game, right? So you're probably not going to do that midseason. So what are some different things you can do without completely overhauling what you're doing defensively? And I think that's it. I think that's what you might start seeing, is an uncharacteristically high number of blitzes. And Nick Wagner from ESPN tweeted this during the game. The Niners' blitz rate was 14% entering today. The lowest in the league. They blitzed Jacoby Brissett on 40% of his dropbacks in the first half. I think that number probably decreased in the second half, just because they didn't need to get after it like that. But you see where they might start making these little changes and how you might start seeing the defense look a little different. And frankly, I think they're going to have to, because it was easy today, and that's great. You want it to be easy against a bad team. I don't know how easy it's going to be next week against the Cardinals or against the Seahawks or against the Chiefs. There are three games coming up.
Yeah, I think, you know, what Nick Sorensen did today kind of, not, it didn't reek of desperation, but it was like, get a little desperate. Like,
sure.
Your unit has not been very good. Your unit has, in fact, struggled and held and not been great against a Matthew Stafford that doesn't have Puka Nacua and Cooper Kupp and Tyler Higbee and the Vikings, who look better but didn't have Jordan Addison and TJ Hawkinson, and, you know, Aaron Jones fumbled a couple times in that game. Like, it's not been great. And so we want to see that unit be the best one on the field. And, you know, Brissett dropped back roughly 34 times in this game. I wouldn't be shocked to see 20-plus pressures in this game by a defense that last week had 17 pressures against the worst pass-protecting offensive line in football.
Mm-hmm.
The Patriots aren't much better, but I would like to think, by the way they played, they probably had 20-plus. Bosa was wrecking shop. I mean, Sam Ekwonu had like four pressures. You're like, whoa, he's just bodying up left tackles, which they're backups, but by all means, body him up, big fella. Get in there. Go do some damage, and he won. And, you know, you're going to have guys step up, and having backup rookie defensive linemen step up is going to be a big ask for this team. But if today's an example of things to watch going forward, Evan Anderson, Ekwonu, other guys, like, heck of a job today by almost every single player on the defensive unit.
Yeah, am I overreacting to Sam Ekwonu? Had a sack last week and was really good again today. I mean, I know I didn't know much about him until last week. A lot of Niner fans probably in the same boat. And it's small sample, but given a chance, and he's produced as well as anyone in that small of a sample size. I mean, we'll see if it continues, but early returns are very, very good.
Yeah, and I think I had a quarterback hit today too. Got it lit up Brissett on a throwaway.
Yeah, just speared him.
Yeah,
right to the chest.
Yeah, nice, it was a nice hit.
They got
the forced fumble too early.
Yeah, right. Just punch it out. Like, that's just an individually great play. Like, I don't care who you're going against. He had the wherewithal to punch it away from the running back when he made his way into the backfield. I'm optimistic about Ekwonu because it wasn't like he had this long history of not playing and now all of a sudden he's in for the 49ers. Like, we've seen them do that with some other defensive linemen, like Deion Jordan and like Jordan Willis. where you see and they come in and you go, okay, maybe they can get something out of him, but you see, like, man, they've had a lot of time to untap this potential. Maybe the potential's just not there, right? But with Ekwonu, he had never really gotten a shot. I think he was an undrafted rookie with the Titans in 2022, and he had half a sack that year, and he hasn't really gotten to play since then. So he gets into a new situation under Chris Kocurek around a very talented defensive line, and I think you're seeing him just come up and making plays. This isn't to say that Sam Ekwonu should start a defensive end or anything, but at a position where they needed anything depth-wise.
Yeah.
And along a defensive line where without Javon Hargrave, you just need somebody, Sterling, you said it, man, they just need somebody to go make a play. It doesn't matter if it's Nick Bosa or Malik Collins or whoever. And Sam Ekwonu, 2 weeks in a row, has come up with a play in the backfield. So I'm not ready to say that he's the breakout star of the season or anything. But if you're getting any kind of regular production from him, you will 100% take it. And I'm optimistic that he's trending the right way. I think. Oh, maybe I'm overreacting. Maybe I'm overreacting.
But. We'll take it further. If Jordan Elliott misses any time, whether it's 1 week or 2 weeks, that means Gross Matos probably plays inside and outside. You're going to have a player like Okwonu get in there. He's going to play much more. So you're asking for more consistent reps from your second and third string players, where we walked into this year with the hopes of a Drake Jackson playing or Robert Beal Jr. playing pivotal snaps, where it's like, this guy Okwonu, it looks great, although in limited reps. He's out playing second-round picks and fifth-round picks, and even at some times, although, again, small sample size, Leonard Floyd didn't have a great game last week, better today, but Okwonu's at times out playing people you paid to get back there on a consistent basis, and it's small sample size, sure, but it's nice to see of a team that needs those players to step up that someone's kind of taking the reins for themselves and saying, you know what, I volunteer as tribute. I'm going to make some plays.
we could talk about Sam Okwonu, and we could talk about Givens and Jordan Elliott and even Malik Collins and others all we want, and even Leonard Floyd. At some point, and this is why today was good, your best pass rusher has to act like your best pass rusher and has to get home to the quarterback. And like, whether it's fair or not, it almost doesn't even matter. Nick, you're the highest paid pass rusher in the NFL. You have to play like it. And it's not easy. You're being double teamed. There was a couple of plays where I was watching him specifically. He's got a double team, and they also have the running back on his side to chip him. Like, he's being at times triple teamed. Part of that is because the other your opponents don't really respect the other guys you got on the D-line, and that's an issue. But it's also because you have proven to be one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. You are very, very, very good. It doesn't matter if you're facing double teams, triple teams. You have to perform. T.J. Watt has what seems like a back-breaking, game-sealing play every single week. The dude is absolutely incredible. And for Nick, it's not like you got to get two or three sacks every single game. You have to impact big plays. Nick, it's a 3rd and 8. You got to get to the quarterback and at least force him off his spot. He steps up into the pocket. Guess what? Malik Collins is there. Bear hugs him for only 1 yard. They have to punt. It's not only about sacks. It's not only about pressures, but it's about when they happen. When are you making your plays? And I think recently, and this goes back to last year as well, part of the frustration around Bosa was, yeah, he'll get his sacks. He'll get his pressures. But on a big 3rd and 8 with the game on the line, he's unable to get off his spot. And that's kind of where the frustration, I think, for me has come from. Today, though, he was all over the place. First down, second down, third down. This was his best game of the year, even though he had 2 sacks earlier in a single game. I thought he was awesome in this game. And we can talk about all those others all we want, and they were good. But Nick Bosa was miles better than anybody else on that D-line, and that's how it should be.
Yeah, A players got to be A players. Yeah. One of the 49ers A players on defense dealing with a little bit of an injury. We'll talk about Fred Warner's ankle next, what Kyle Shanahan had to say about it, and what the 49ers might do if Fred Warner misses any time. Sterling Bennett there, Mark Grandy there. I'm Kyle Madsen. This is Overtime on 95.7 The Game. We'll be back in a second.
Coming on 3rd and 10. Picked up enough to give him time to find George Kittle. Oh, so many bodies. He ripped it away. Touchdown, San Francisco. George Kittle just wanted it more.
Welcome back into Overtime. I'm Kyle Madsen. Sterling Bennett, Mark Grandy hanging out, enjoying a 30-13 win by the San Francisco 49ers. That play by George Kittle, guys. Play of the year so far for you, Sterling?
It's either that or it's the Juwan Jennings Moss of Quentin Lake last week.
Because the Juwan Moss came in a loss, I'm going with this George Kittle one. Yeah.
Yeah, just the it felt like a throwaway when he first threw it. Well,
my first reaction was, that Purdy just sailed it out of the back of the end zone. I legit said out loud, oh, no chance, incomplete. And then when I realized it was going to land in bounds, I saw three Patriots. I was like, no chance Kittle even gets a hand on this. Then he caught it, and then no chance he even gets in bounds, and he did that. No chance he even holds on, and he did all of it.
It was an unbelievable play. I'm with you. the throw went up and it went, oh, he's throwing it away. And then like, oh, dang, that's actually in a good spot. And then you see Kittle go up for it. And I thought there was no chance he got feet in or a hind right. end in or a knee. I just thought there was no way he was in bounds.
Yeah. I thought he dropped it. it was like, oh, gosh.
Unreal play. It's nice to see the after the last couple of weeks where it's felt like, God, just injuries on injuries, and man, who's going to step up? It was nice to see like Deebo Samuel, long catch today. Brandon Ayuk, long catch today. George Kittle have that kind of reception where you start to see, okay, little bit of a rocky start to the year, but at the same time, during today's game, you start to see where the dominant version of this team is. This isn't some team that just fell off a cliff and they're going to go win 9 games this year. That might happen if they can never get fully healthy, but you start to see like, okay, this is a team. Today felt like the kind of win for me where, all right, the preseason stuff is over. They're overcoming their injuries. That's going to happen throughout the year. But that was a good group of players ready to go dominate a game today.
Do you want to hear what Purdy thinks of George Kittle's touchdown catch?
I would love nothing more than to hear that, Mark.
I'll play it for you. Here's Brock Purdy on the touchdown throw to George Kittle.
The play was for him to break out and then go up. It was more of a third down play, but we thought we'd get the look for it down there. And so I saw him break out, and then I was getting hit, so I was like, I just need to give my guy a shot here and give him a chance. Just put it up for him and let him come down with it. So, but he made a great play, but way better than a better throw than that was. Like he made the play. So that's George.
Thought it was a fine throw.
That's George.
That's George.
I wish I had as much confidence in anything as Brock Purdy does in anyone he's throwing the ball to.
It's ridiculous. And that's where
George's down there somewhere.
George got it. Let's go, boys.
Three Patriots around him. Yeah, I'll just throw a jump ball.
That's fine. He's got it. Well, and that's where I, and I know this isn't what we're talking about, but bear with me. That's where the whole like Brock Purdy is the system thing. Like, honestly, throws like that are probably not Kyle Shanahan's favorite thing. Like, he's very clearly not just, 1, 2, 3, aim, shoot, fire. Like, he's scrambling around. He's running around. He's just throwing it up to George down there. Like, that's it. It's so much more than that. And I know that all the scrambling and the off schedule plays, really jump out, but there's plays like that too, where, yeah, you know what? That's probably not exactly how it was drawn up, but that's a quarterback giving his guy a shot.
You can tell Shanahan's on the sideline just clenching that clipboard about to break it and is like, why would you? It actually worked. Okay, touchdown. This is great. Everything's fine. And maybe for the first time all year, I don't know about you guys, but it felt like they were actually having fun. That's
a good point.
Sports supposed to be fun, but like Brock Purdy's like, hi, mom, in the camera. It's all good vibes. There never was a thought of this game is tight. It's close. Like you're clenching your butt together, hoping you can keep it in. Like, we got to win this game. Like, oh, God. It's like, this is like, we're doing great. We're vibing. We're having fun. We're throwing the ball deep, whether it's Kittle or Juwan or Ayuk at times or Deebo. Like, this game felt like we're playing free and loose. And sometimes too loose. Purdy's interception late wasn't great, but even then, we're having fun. They're vibing. It's a good time. Could it have been better? Sure, you could have won by 30 for all I care. But you won by 17. It's great. And you can clean things up in the film room, tape room, and practice. Cool, but you won. You won handily. It wasn't like there was a fear of, oh, my God, we're going to lose this game. It was like, it's in the bag.
30 to 13 is an impressive win in the NFL. Winning by 17 is not easy to do. And keep in mind, this is a team that took the Seahawks to overtime. That beat the Bengals in Cincinnati week one. They got smoked by the Jets last week and maybe are coming down to earth a little bit. But anything like that happens in the NFL. The Niners, what was the spread? Like 9.5, 10 points? 10.5 points? That's a lot.
Biggest spread of the week, and you covered by nearly a touchdown.
They covered like comfortably.
Yeah. By the way, lock of the day was Niners minus 10.5.
Mm-hmm.
I bet it. Let's go.
Come on.
I almost got the score prediction exact.
You did. Okay, so Mark said to me today, before the game started, I said, I kind of think the Niners are going to roll these dudes. Like, I think they're locked in. I think they're... There was the video of Fred breaking down a huddle before people had their uniforms on. Like, he got... Well, people are out, running around in their undies and stuff before the game. He had people together for that. and like gave a speech there. So I was like, hey, you know what? I think these guys are locked in. They're going to roll. And Mark went, yeah, I think 27-10.
There's a field goal off for both teams.
You know, and for me, and where I land, you get credit for that. Where I'm from, you get plus or minus a field goal.
I'll take it. Yeah, win by 17 points. It was an Ottoman game, as you might say, if you bet the Niners.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, just to win, it was important. And I think, Sterling, you're onto something. For me, clearly, I mean, obviously, and this is so straightforward and obvious, I'm not even sure I need to say it, but I will anyway. You just had to win the game by any means necessary. Like, you can't go to 1-3. You can't lose at home to the Patriots, who, as you said, Kyle, are coming back down to earth. They just got obliterated by the New York Jets.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming off of a mini bye, so they had the rest advantage, but I don't care. You have to win this game no matter what. Even if it was ugly, even if it took a last second touchdown, like even if that's what it took, win the game. Bottom line, no matter what, win. But there's also something to worth saying in terms of what you're talking about, Sterling. It kind of had some last year's vibes to it.
Yeah.
The fun that they had. Brock Purdy smiling and waving at the camera, as you pointed out, Sterling. As you were talking about earlier, Kyle, all the big plays, the chunk plays down the field. You had Debo running past a cornerback, which generally seems like something that happens when the cornerback is worried about McCaffrey or Kittle underneath. Like, Debo generally doesn't just run past someone. That's not the kind of guy that he is. He hit the ball in his hands, and he's a loser. And he can make guys miss, yes, but he's not the route runner that just finds himself wide open deep down the field all the time. You had that. You had Kittle with a diving catch on a third down. You had Kittle, the incredible touchdown. You had the good vibes, and you had some of that week one, obviously. It's kind of hard to suss out whether the vibes week one are because it's week one or because the team is having a good time. Today felt like they were having a good time. And Nick Bosa playfully, like, celebrating when he got a sack, finally. It reminded me of, I forget which year it was. It was during the Kevin Durant Warriors era, and Klay Thompson got off to a terrible start. Actually, I think it was the night that he set the record for most threes in a game in Chicago against the Bulls. And he was shooting terrible to begin that season. It was maybe 3 weeks into the year or something like that. And he finally breaks out, and it gets to a point where they cut to a commercial, and Klay, after making like his first five threes or whatever it was, looks at his right hand and says, dang, I missed you. Like, you're finally back. I missed you. Like, it was that kind of vibe around the Niners. And that's what I felt when Nick Bosa is like kind of jokingly showing his frustration because he finally got the sack he'd been chasing for so long. So the win is great. But Sterling, I think to your point, there is something to be said for the way it felt, and it did kind of feel like it had some of those vibes from last year, where it felt like no matter what, the Niners were going to come out and they were going to put 30 on your head, because that's just what they do.
I do want to say, if you had Niners minus 10.5, you're sweating a little at the end. Pats had first and 10 at the Niners 18.
Never a doubt.
No, that's Mark Grandy, Sterling Bennett. I'm Kyle Mads. We're hanging out. 888-957-9570. 888-957-9570 is the phone number here on Overtime. That's also the Xfinity mobile text line if you want to hit us there. The 925 says, we still need to trade Ayuk if we want to get where we want to go. You heard it here. Now I'm not there.
What?
I'm not there. No, dude, I will say, though, just putting a pin in the Ayuk thing, because honestly, at some point, Ayuk's going to have a 9-catch, 128-yard, 2-touchdown game. We're going to be like, oh, hey, he's back, when really the ball just found him, and he's been doing what he's been doing all year. Juwan Jennings turning into a legitimate weapon for the 49ers, though, and I know that we've all known, right? If you watched the 49ers, there was no question that Juwan Jennings could play. But then you go look at his numbers. Like, if you had asked me, hey, how many catches did he have last year? I would have said, like, I don't know, 30, 35? It was 19. But all of them feel so impactful. And then today, 3 catches, 88 yards. If that's just what Juwan Jennings is going to turn into, is this low-volume, just 30, 40-yard catch guy, it just adds another element to the Niners' offense. It comes from the most unlikely place because he runs like a 4.8. I'm here for it.
His catch today, Sterling, the one deep down the field.
Ridiculous.
Uncalled defensive pass interference, and he caught it anyway. He is incredible down the field.
Yeah, man. And it's not anything new, right? I don't think he's doing anything different. He's getting in the ball.
Third and Juwan has become first and second in Juwan. He's just been Juwan. So reliable. Like, just Juwan, right? Just Juwan, just JJ. Like, he has become a player that you know, we've grown used to being used in clutch situations and kind of sparingly, kind of that number two tight end role where they don't touch the ball a lot, but when they do, it's in clutch, you know, clutch downs or whatnot. And you know, his breakout obviously came in the Super Bowl last year, and that's carried over. He got paid this offseason, which somewhat is never brought up. Like, he got a massive raise from his like $750,000 salary he was making, and he's proving that, hey, I can be a receiver number two in the NFL, and I guarantee you on a bad team he's in you know, receiver number one. Put him on Carolina, he's probably the best guy they got out there.
The Patriots,
and they're a terrible team, but still, like, Juwan is awesome, and he's not just third in Juwan anymore. Like Kyle said, he's just Juwan,
just Ben Jennings. Just out there.
Benny Jennings.
Just Benny Jennings out there. Hey, you know what's kind of wild? Speaking of 49ers who have kind of broken out that we were all waiting for to break out. We haven't even mentioned really Jordan Mason today.
Ho-hum.
He had 24 carries, 123 yards, a touchdown. It's just so casual now. That's just what Jordan Mason's going to do. Is 100 yards in a tutty every week?
At a certain point, the national conversation is going to become, well, Jordan Mason is just a product of that system. I mean, anybody could do it, right?
Right. That's exactly what it's
going to
be.
What is so infuriating is everyone will have that opinion. Like, people have that opinion about Brock Purdy. We know that. People have that opinion about Brandon Ayuk. We learned that this offseason through the very painful contract negotiations. And I guarantee you people have that thought about Jordan Mason. Okay, so if three of the most important pieces on this team, your number one receiver, your quarterback, and your running back, whoever it is, if they're all products of the system, what even is the system? Those are the three cogs in the system. Like, what are we even doing here? They're just good players. It's pretty simple.
Yeah.
I don't know what we're even talking about.
If you watch the 49ers play football, because today's offense did not look like last year. It didn't look like last year's offense from a aesthetic standpoint. They ran this graphic on Fox today. They're last in the league in yak right now in yards after catch, after leading the league in that in each of the last 5 years. They're last in the league because the offense is just different. They're not ripping off 50, 60 yard run plays. They're Jordan Mason had a 25 yard run at the end of the game. This is the longest carry of the year. It's 25 yards. Christian McCaffrey had three of them in the first 2 weeks last year. or had three carries longer than that in the first 2 weeks last year. It just looks different. We talked about Brock Purdy already, how different it looks. It's like drop back, pushing the ball down the field. It's not everything is an in-breaking route. They're stretching defenses vertically. It's a different version of this offense. So if you're going, yeah, it's a system thing. Well, like, okay, well, if they're good in a bunch of different systems, at some point it's no longer the system. So I'm out on that critique, especially after watching them today. It just looked like a pretty normal NFL offense. It was executed at a really high level. I think if you take the interception off of Brock Purdy's stat line, he's 15 of 27 for 288, a touchdown and a pick. You take the interception off that stat line, it's another just sterling day for no pun intended. Another sterling day for Brock Purdy. He's just, hey, you know what? Good players playing together turns a team to be pretty good. You heard it here first. You're welcome.
Shocking analysis.
Thanks. Yeah, I don't know. Go ahead. Sorry.
Does it bother you the fact that he fumbled twice today, though? Like, in my head, I think Mason? Of, let's say, in... Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
In 10 weeks' time, let's say Christian McCaffrey's back. If that continues, which I don't think it will, but if it does, he's not going to play, right? That is a Kyle Shanahan no-no that'll get anybody in the doghouse. Like, he had a great game. I get it. Over 120-plus yards, big touchdown. We all love Mason. Hoorah. Like, I'm all for it. But the two fumbles, that's not great. And I don't want to get negative, but, like, if CMC is back, he's not playing if he's going to keep doing that.
The fumbles, it's a good point, Sterling, and I was just going to bring it up as well because I saw it on the Xfinity mobile text line. Shout out to the 408 for bringing it up. Jordan Mason fumbled twice, put the ball on the deck twice. I think they were both kind of fluky kind of fumbles. Doesn't excuse them. They were still bad. One of them was Brock Purdy. He had a quick read. He could throw a quick pass out to the right, or he could hand it off to Jordan Mason. So Mason... Mason, yeah, RPO, classic RPO. Mason's unsure of if he's going to get the ball or not. So he's just kind of waiting with his arms open for Brock to deliver it to him. And if he lets go of it, then he'll clamp down on it and he'll take it. I think he was a little confused, thought Purdy was going to pull it back and throw it. He didn't. Brock let the ball go, and Mason made a mistake, didn't have it there. And then the other one was on a pitch, and he just simply didn't catch the pitch. Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. Those are bad. You can't have that. But it's not as if he's running up the middle, and he's holding it in one arm, and there's an easy punch from a D lineman knocking it out. I'm not sure exactly which is more concerning or a worse mistake, but it feels like the ones that he made today are more maybe a singular lack of communication with Brock, focus on the pitch, and those are pretty easily correctable versus an overall overwhelming or worrying trend of this guy just when the ball gets hit, he loses it. This was just on him not catching the ball a couple of times, and that seems like something that I'm not terribly concerned is going to be something he repeats going forward.
Yeah, that's where you saw Isaac Arendo, right? Isaac Arendo fumbles a kickoff because he ran into his own guy and the ball came out.
That's a little worse.
Like,
I think
a ball security problem, right? Like that.
And then got benched immediately.
and then Juszczyk was returning punts and Debo was returning kicks.
I don't love that. I don't know what happened to Jacob Cowing.
Me either.
That he didn't get to return punts.
He got hurt, right?
Did he?
I think he hurt his shoulder.
Oh, okay. Shanahan didn't mention it after the game, at least that I saw, but. Yeah, Isaac Arendo fumbles once and is out of the game. I agree with you. The Mason fumbles looked more like a execution problem that can be fixed more than that guy's just not holding onto the football.
Like George Pickens does every single week.
Yeah, where he's just loose with the football. Yeah. So I'm not super concerned about Jordan Mason's fumble problem just yet. If this is something that we're talking about next week and then the week after that, okay, then yeah, let's talk about it. But I'm not super worried today because it did look just like an execution thing that you can fix. And it's not just a carelessness with the ball.
I do think the other thing about Jordan Mason, though, which is important, and obviously the McCaffrey question and all of this will make it a big deal or not a big deal. I'm honestly a little shocked that Jordan Mason hasn't maybe shown a little bit more wear and tear through four games. They are feeding him the ball over and over and over again. I mean, he's getting the McCaffrey touches, every single one of them. Like, Garendo's coming in and getting a couple of touches a game. Jordan Mason would be getting a couple of touches a game if McCaffrey was healthy. And I said this, you guys remember, after week one, the win over the Jets, I would be a little concerned if, say, McCaffrey misses 8 games. McCaffrey misses 8, and all 8 of those games, Mason is getting like 20 plus touches a game. I'm a little concerned by the time you get to game 6, game 7, game 8, that he's going to be wearing down a little bit, and it might not look as pretty as it has through 4 games. Now, he's given me no reason other than those 2 fumbles today, which again, I think are a little more fluky than anything else. He was awesome again today, averaging over 5 yards a carry, 24 rushes, 123 yards, and a touchdown. Also had a touchdown through the air, taken back because of a strange holding call against George Kittle. He's been awesome, and this isn't me saying I don't believe in Jordan Mason going forward, but if he's touching the ball 20 plus times every single game, I think we will get to a point where a guy who hasn't touched the ball this many times in a very, very long time, probably going all the way back to high school the last time it happened, I would get a little bit concerned about how long he can keep this up, which is where the McCaffrey question comes in. I'm not so sure how much Shanahan believes in Garendo to take much of a load off of him. Maybe you do go out and eventually bring in a veteran running back to spell him a little bit, but I'd be concerned if McCaffrey's absence is extended maybe another month plus. I don't know how Mason's going to hold up down the stretch because he's new to this. It's difficult to touch the ball 20-plus times for half a season, and we're getting, obviously, 4 games in, and we're a month in now. If this keeps going for Mason, that might be a point of worry for me personally.
He's on pace for 387 carries.
Jeez.
That's a lot, FYI. Yeah. That is so many carries. He's up to 91 through 4 games, which I'm with you, Mark. I think that's unsustainable. And you saw last week, Isaac Rendo, 5 carries. Should have had a 6, but it got called back for holding, right? And then you hear Chris Forrester this week talking about how impressed they are with Isaac Rendo and how happy they are with him. And Kyle Shanahan saying, like, yeah, we didn't learn anything new. We've always been a big fan of his. And he's going to start earning more carries going forward and this and that. He has 1 today for no yards. And then he fumbles on the kickoff, and he's never seen again. Kickoff, offense or otherwise. Here's what Kyle Shanahan had to say about Isaac Garendo's fumble.
I chalk it up to an NFL football player getting hit and fumbling it. You know, I don't put it on being a rookie. You can fumble it whoever you are. It was a big fumble, especially opening up in the third quarter. I think it's what gave them a chance. They answered right away. Biggest thing when someone has a turnover, you want the defense to go out and hold them to three. I think they scored on a fourth down maybe. You know, we had a commitment stop, trying to stop an inside zone run, and they had a good play call getting out there to score. But we'll come back to them. But yeah, that was a big fumble.
We'll come back to him, just not today. He was done for the day. Yes, that's a bad mistake.
To say that was an NFL player, like, he caused it himself. It wasn't like he got hit. He just dropped the football, essentially. But does Garendo's fumble impact maybe how long they can ride Mason? Because we already saw Shanahan today say, look, you fumbled. Whether that was the reason he didn't play in the second half at all, it seemed like it was. Maybe there's something else going on. Mm-hmm. But if that happens and Shanahan is quick to pull a plug on a player like Garendo, who is the RB2, it feels like it is a lone wolf backfield for Jordan Mason. He has to be the guy until they can get to Christian McCaffrey, and who knows if that ever gets resolved this year. Maybe it doesn't, maybe it does. I hope it does, for sure. But, you know, if Garendo struggles on kick returns and fumbles again, you're not putting Patrick Taylor Jr. back there. Maybe you got to sign Matt Breida. Maybe Kyle Juszczyk's getting a couple carries. Maybe it's Deebo Samuel, the wide back. But we've seen Deebo Samuel, the wide back, in the last couple years. When he's back there, you know it's coming. So It feels like it is a Jordan Mason bridge to CMC, and that is the only option right now for San Francisco.
Yeah, a little bit concerning. Shanahan also said, almost word for word, the same thing about Jacob Cowing when Cowing fumbled against the Vikings after week two. Like, it was almost word for word. Like, the fumbles happen. It's just what happens. Now, Cowing has stayed back there and has returned punts still until he got hurt. Sterling was right. I checked on it. A shoulder injury for Cowing. He was questionable to return. Did not return at that point. I don't think it's anything serious. I'm not sure Shanahan addressed it post-game, at least not that I've heard. If it is, it's nothing major. He said the same thing about Cowing. I know a lot of Niner fans have been frustrated by Cowing's lack of involvement in the actual offense, especially last week when Deebo wasn't in and Kittle wasn't in, and you needed someone to make some plays. But he stuck with Cowing returning punts, but Garendo fumbles once, and now he's not even getting any more rushes. I'm not exactly sure how Shanahan should go about this. The one thing I'm so fearful of, Deebo Samuel is so valuable to this team that I don't want to waste his touches. Every single touch for Deebo is so valuable and so important.
Yeah.
And valuable, one, for what he does in terms of advancing the ball down the field. It's also valuable because you know he only has so many of them in him. Like, don't just give Deebo Samuel the kickoff return because you feel like maybe he's going to... Like, is that worth it? He's going to take a big hit.
Yeah.
And you're going to take away a touch that he could get on offense and change the game. Like, Garendo fumbled once. Okay, great. Get back in there and do it again, and don't run into the back of your own blocker and fumble this time, bud. Like, I don't know. I would like to show a little bit more belief in my young guy. You can't have that fumble, but I also don't want one play and one moment to be the reason that Deebo Samuel now is forced to return kicks and gets injured as a result. That's the nightmare that this might turn into. So you can't have that. You can't have a fumble that turns into points on the other side, but I think you got to show your young guys a little bit more faith and confidence so they can get it done, and throw them back out there. Don't kill their confidence after one bad play.
Kyle Shanahan showing faith in a young player would be the first time. that's kind of what it is. I don't think that Isaac Garendo's persona non grata for the rest of the year, but it does matter that he's a rookie, because Kyle Shanahan doesn't have anything to go off of. So he says it's an NFL player. I don't chalk it up to him being a rookie or anything. Totally. But that's why he didn't come back in. If Deebo Samuel had done that on a kick return, Deebo Samuel is going back and returning another kick.
I mean, we could mention Ronnie Bell from last week. Ronnie Bell has dropped passes before.
Yeah.
And he gets on the field.
Healthy scratch today.
Yeah, healthy scratch today because Debo was available. But
the reaction to that on the internet, Trent Williams in, Debo Samuel in, Ronnie Bell, healthy scratch. The Ronnie Bell news was the yes! was the one that really got people. All right, we're having a good time. The 49ers win 30-13. They are 2-2 on the season. 888-957-9570 if you'd like to join the program. That's also the Xfinity mobile text line. We'll have more from a dominant 49ers win next on Overtime.